Chapter 27. The two men, casually lolling in what the native villagers called a panga, looked like any of the local men who fished the Rio San Juan. They wore baggy white shorts and t-shirts with soft, wide baseball-style caps. Two outriggers hung over the panga's stern on an angle, their lines trolling for the fisherman's next dinner. Except for a passing experienced fisherman who bothered to notice, no one on shore would have guessed the lines carried no hooks. In a waterway teeming with fish, no hook went without a bite more than a few seconds after it dropped onto the surface. The skiff was propelled by a 30-horsepower Mariner outboard steered by cables running to a center console column surmounted by an automobile steering wheel. The flat-bottomed 20-foot panga moved smartly up the calm river through the tropical rainforest under a light shower. They were traveling in the middle of the long rainy season that began in May and lasted through January. The jungle vegetation was so thick along the shore it seemed that every plant was in constant battle against its neighbor for a glimpse of the sun that beamed down infrequently through the never-ending mass of clouds. Pitt and Giordino had purchased the panga, whose bows were painted with the name Greek Angel, along with fuel and supplies, within hours after the Numa jet had taken off for Washington, with Rudy Gunn, Patrick Dodge, and Renee Ford's body. The repair crew that was flown into Barra Colorado had beached Poco Benito at low tide and were working efficiently to make her seaworthy for the voyage north. Jack McGee threw them a going-away party and insisted on stocking their boat with enough beer and wine to start a saloon. Inspector Ortega was on hand, graciously expressing his appreciation for their cooperation in his investigation and his sorrow for Renee's senseless murder. He was also irritated and regretful that the woman they knew as Rita Anderson had eluded his dragnet. Once Ortega's team learned of Barbara Hacken's missing passport, and they interrogated the owner of the lodge and the security guard at the airport gate, they were certain Rita had fled Costa Rica to the United States. Pitt added a piece to the puzzle when he heard the aircraft was painted lavender. This fact placed Rita squarely in the Odyssey camp. Now Ortega vowed to pursue Renee's murder internationally and to seek the cooperation of American law enforcement. Pitt sat relaxed, leaned back in a raised chair in front of the wheel column, and steered the boat with one foot as they passed quiet, picturesque lagoons that opened onto the river. Giordino had borrowed a lounge chair and pad from McGee and reclined with his feet hanging over the bow, warily eyeing the occasional 18-foot crocodile that he spotted sunning itself on the bank. Wise to the ways of a rainforest, Giordino shrouded himself with mosquito netting. Not usually mentioned in the travel brochures, in this part of the world the little bloodsuckers were nearly as prolific as raindrops. Not wanting to hinder his movements, Pitt soaked his exposed skin with repellent. The first 20 miles took them northwesterly along the Rio Colorado until it eventually met the muddy waters of the Rio San Juan that served as the meandering borderline between Nicaragua and Costa Rica. From here, it was another 80 kilometers up the river until they reached the sound of San Carlos on Lake Cocibolca, better known simply as Lake Nicaragua. "I've yet to see any signs of construction," said Giordano, studying the shoreline through a pair of binoculars. "You've already seen it," said Pitt, watching the multicolored birds nesting in the trees whose branches reached over the flowing water. Giordino twisted in his lounge chair, pulled down his sunglasses, and stared at Pitt over the rims as if he was looking at a bookie, giving 100-to-1 odds on a favorite to win the next race. "Run that by me again." "Your friend, Mickey Levy. Remember her?" "The name rings a bell," muttered Giordino, still trying to follow Pitt's tack. Over dinner, she talked about plans to build an underground bridge, a railroad tunnel system that was designed to travel through Nicaragua between the oceans. She also said the project was never launched because Specta pulled out. "A deception." "A deception," Giordino parroted. After the engineers and geologists, like your friend Mickey, finished their survey, Odyssey officials insisted they sign confidentiality agreements never to reveal any information about the proposed project. Specta threatened to withhold any payment until they agreed. Then they announced that after studying the reports, they decided the project was not practical and cost prohibitive. "How do you know all this?" "I called your friend Mickey just before we left Washington, and after she faxed me the site plans," Pitt said casually. "Go on." "I asked her a few more questions regarding Specter and the underground bridge." "Didn't she tell you?" "I guess she forgot," said Giordino pensively. Anyway, as it turns out, Spectre never had any intention of dumping the project. His Odyssey engineers have been digging furiously for more than 2 years. This is borne out by the port we passed, with container ships unloading what was probably mining equipment. Wasn't it I who said a neat trick if he could hide millions of tons of excavated rock and muck? And you were right. It is a neat trick. A light suddenly flashed on in Giordino's head. The brown crud? The million-dollar answer, Pitt acknowledged. Satellite photos never showed construction activity because there was none to be seen. The only way to hide millions of tons of dirt and rock was to build a large tube, mix the muck with water, and pump it a couple of miles offshore into the sea. Giordino opened a Costa Rican beer and wiped the humidity-induced sweat with a towel across his face under the mosquito net. He rolled the cold can across his forehead. Okay, Mr. Smart Guy, why the secrecy? Why would Spectre go to such great lengths to cover up the project? Where is the gain if it was created and built to transport goods and materials from sea to shining sea and no one knows it's there? Pitt took a beer thrown by Giordino and pulled the tap. If I knew that, we wouldn't be swimming in our own sweat, cruising up the river admiring the wildlife. What do we hope to find? An entrance, for one thing. They can't completely hide men and equipment going in and out of the tunnels. You think we'll find it on the jungle ride through hell on the African Queen? Pitt laughed. Not on, but under. According to Mickey's site plan, the excavation would have run under a town called El Castillo, halfway up the river. So what's the attraction in El Castillo? Tunnels of extreme length require ventilation shafts to supply air to the workers, cool or heat the air as required, and bleed off exhaust fumes from the excavation equipment and smoke in the event of a fire. Giordino stared uneasily at a huge crocodile swiveling off the bank into the water. Then his gaze turned to the impenetrable jungle along the north bank. I hope you don't have any plans to hike in there. Mama Giordino's sunny boy would never be seen again. El Castillo is an isolated community on the river with no roads in or out. The main attraction is an old Spanish fortress. And you think a ventilation shaft pops up where everybody in town can see it, Giordino said dubiously. Seems to me the jungle is a more ideal hiding place for ventilator shafts. It's so thick no aircraft or satellite photo could spot a shaft from above. No doubt most are hidden in the jungle, but I'm counting on them constructing one that comes up near civilization in case they have to use it for an emergency evacuation. The scenery along the river was so spectacular, the two men drifted off into silence as they absorbed the beauty of the vegetation and the varied species of wildlife. It was like a boating wildlife safari through untouched tropical splendor. They spotted white-faced spider monkeys jabbering at jaguars which lurked under the trees. Anteaters as large as Blue Ribbon State Fair sows ambled through the brush, keeping a safe distance inshore from the caimans and crocodiles. Colorfully beaked toucans and multi-hued feathered parrots flew amid rainbows of butterflies and orchids. The jungles around the Rio San Juan had been described by Mark Twain when he journeyed down the river as an earthly paradise, the most enchanted land to be experienced anywhere. Pitt kept the Greek Angel at a steady and smooth 5 knots. This was not water to speed through and cause waves from your wake to wash over the environmentally perfect shoreline. The fabulous 3,000 acres of virgin rainforest was preserved as the Indio Maíz Biological Reserve. 300 species of reptiles, 200 species of mammals, and over 600 species of birds called it home. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when they turned off the Rio San Juan onto the Bartola River and cruised a short distance before docking at the Refugio Bartola Lodge and Research Center. Nestled in the rainforest, the compound had 11 rooms with private baths and mosquito nets. Pitt and Giordino each registered for a room. After cleaning up, they headed for the bar and restaurant. Pitt had a tequila on the rocks whose brand was unknown to him. Giordino, claiming he had seen over a dozen Tarzan movies crawling with Englishmen on safari, opted for gin. Pitt noticed a fat man in a white suit sitting by himself at a table near the bar. There was an air about the man that suggested he was a respected local resident of the river, someone who might be a wealth of information. Pitt approached the man. Pardon me, sir, but I wondered if you might like to join my friend and me. The man looked up, and Pitt could see he was quite elderly, approaching his 80s. His face was flushed and he sweated freely, but miraculously managed not to stain his white suit. He wiped a handkerchief over his bald head and nodded. "Of course, of course. I'm Percy Rathbone. Please, it might be easier if you joined me," he said, pointing at his girth that amply filled his wicker chair. "My name is Dirk Pitt, and my friend here is Al Giardino." The handshake was firm, but sweaty. "Pleased to meet you. Sit down, sit down." Pitt was amused that Rathbone had a habit of repeating his words. "You have the look of a man who knows and enjoys the jungle." It shows, does it?" said Rathbone with a short laugh. "Lived along the river in Nicaragua and Costa Rica most all my life. My family came here during World War II. My father was an agent for the British, keeping an eye on Germans who tried to operate hidden facilities in the lagoons to service and refuel their U-boats. If I may ask, how does someone earn a living on a river in the middle of nowhere?" Rathbone looked at Pitt slyly. Would you believe I rely on tourism?" Pitt wasn't sure he believed him, but played along. "Then you own a local business." "Right on, right on. I make a tidy income off fishermen and nature lovers who come to visit the refuge. I have a small chain of resorts between Managua and San Juan del Norte. You gentlemen should look me up on my website when you get home." "But this refuge is owned and run by the Wildlife Refuge." Rathbone seemed to stiffen slightly at Pitt's perception. "True, true. I'm on holiday. I'd like to get away from my own ventures and relax here where I'm not bothered by guests. How about you fellows? Come for the fishing?" "That, and the wildlife. We began our cruise at Barra Colorado and intend to reach Managua eventually." A marvelous tour," said Rathbone. "You'll enjoy every minute of it. There's nothing like it in the hemisphere." A round of drinks came and Giardino signed for them on his room. "Tell me, Mr. Rathbone, why is a river that runs almost from the Pacific to the Atlantic known to so few outsiders?" "The river was world famous until the Panama Canal was built. Then the Rio San Juan fell into the dustbin of history. A Spanish conquistador named Hernández de Córdoba sailed up the San Juan in 1524. He made it all the way into Lake Nicaragua and established the colonial city of Granada on the opposite end. The Spanish who followed Córdoba built forts bristling with guns throughout Central America to keep the French and English out. One was El Castillo, a few miles up the river from here." "Were the Spanish successful?" asked Pitt. Indeed, yes," Rathbone said, waving his hands. "But not entirely. Henry Morgan and Sir Francis Drake sailed up the river, but never made it past El Castillo, into the lake. 100 or more years later, they were followed by Horatio Nelson, when he was a mere captain. He sailed a small fleet of ships up the San Juan and attacked El Castillo, which still stands. His assault failed. The only time in his career he lost a battle. He was reminded of the embarrassment the rest of his life." "Why is that?" asked Giardino. "Because he lost an eye during the attack." "Right or left?" Rathbone thought a moment, not getting the joke, then shrugged. "I don't remember." Pitt savored a sip of the tequila. "How long did the Spanish control the river?" "Until the early 1850s in the California Gold Rush. Commodore Vanderbilt, the railroad and shipping tycoon, saw a golden opportunity. He made a deal with the Spanish for his ships to provide ferry service for eager prospectors who had booked his steamers in New York and Boston for the long voyage to California. His passengers changed from ocean-going ships to river steamers at San Juan del Norte. Then they steamed up the San Juan and across the lake to La Virgen. From there, it was only a short 12-mile wagon ride to the little Pacific port of San Juan del Sur, actually only a couple of docks, where they reboarded Vanderbilt steamers that carried the gold-hungry miners on to San Francisco. Not only did they cut off hundreds of miles by not sailing around Cape Horn, but saved another 1,000 miles bypassing the isthmus at Panama to the south." "When did river traffic die?" asked Pitt. "The Accessory Transit Company, as Vanderbilt called it, faded away with the construction of the Panama Canal. The Commodore built a huge mansion in San Juan del Norte, which still stands, although it is abandoned and overgrown with weeds. For 80 years, the river lay forgotten, until the 1990s when it emerged as a tourist attraction. Seems like it was a more logical route for a canal than Panama. Rathbone shook his head sadly. By far, but a complicated game of politics played by your President Teddy Roosevelt put it hundreds of miles out of the way to the south. They could still dig a canal through here, said Giordino thoughtfully. Too late. Big business interests in the Panama Canal, environmentalists and ecologists would all fight the project tooth and nail. Even if the Nicaraguan government gave its blessing, no one would put up the money. I heard there were plans afoot to build a railroad tunnel through Nicaragua between the oceans. Rathbone stared out over the river. There were rumors circulating up and down the river for months, but nothing ever came of it. Surveyors came with transits and tramped through the jungles. Helicopters were buzzing all over the place. Geologists and engineers filled my lodges and drank my whiskey. But after nearly a year, they packed up their equipment, went home, and that was the end of that. Giordino finished off his gin and ordered another. None ever came back. Rathbone shook his head. Not that I'm aware of. Did they give a reason for not pursuing the project? Pitt queried. Again, a shake of the head. None seemed to know more than I did. Their contracts were finished and they were paid off. It all seemed very cloak and dagger. I got one of the engineers drunk the night before he was to depart, but all I got out of him was that he and his fellow engineers were all sworn to secrecy. Was the general contractor called Odyssey? Rathbone stiffened slightly. Yes, that was it, that was it. Odyssey. The head man even came and stayed at my lodge in El Castillo. A huge fellow. Must have weighed 400 pounds. Called himself Spectre. Very strange. Never did get a good look at his face. He was always surrounded by an entourage, mostly women. Women? Giordino perked up. Most attractive, but business executive types. Very aloof, very efficient. Never talked or offered to be friendly with any of the local people. How did they arrive? Pitt put to Rathbone. Landed and took off on the river in a big amphibian airplane painted like an orchid. Lavender. I guess you could call it that. Giordino swirled his gin around the ice cubes. Did you ever get a hint about why the project never got off the ground? Rumor, gossip, and hearsay came up with at least 50 reasons, but none made any sense. My friends in the government at Managua acted as amazed as everyone along the river. They claimed the fault was not theirs. They offered Odyssey every benefit, every advantage, since the project would have greatly enhanced Nicaragua's economy. My own opinion is that Spectre found other more profitable projects for the Odyssey Corporation and simply moved on. At that moment, it felt as if the earth was twitching and the ice in their glasses tinkled, and the contents quivered as if invisible raindrops were falling on it. The tops of the trees in the jungle swayed in unison with the birds squawking and the moan of unseen animals. Earthquake, Giordino said indifferently. More like a slight earth tremor, Pitt agreed, taking another sip from his drink. You fellows don't seem upset at our local ground movement, said Rathbone in mild surprise. We grew up in California, Giordino explained. Pitt exchanged glances with Giordino. Then he said, I wonder if we'll experience any tremors on the rest of our voyage up the river. Rathbone looked uneasy. I doubt it. They come and go like thunder, but very infrequently, and have yet to cause any damage. The natives are a superstitious lot. They believe the ancient gods of their ancestors have returned and are living in the jungle. He slowly, with some effort, rose from his chair and stood unsteadily. Gentlemen, thank you for the drinks. It was indeed, most delightful talking with you. But with age comes an urge to go to bed early. Will I see you again tomorrow? Pitt came to his feet and shook Rathbone's hand. Perhaps. We'll probably take a nature hike in the morning and continue our journey later in the afternoon. We'd like to spend a day in El Castillo and see the ruins of the fortress before we head upriver into Lake Nicaragua, added Giordino. I'm afraid you can only see the fortress from a distance, said Rathbone. Government police have put it off limits to all locals and visiting tourists. They claimed it was deteriorating under the crowds wandering the ruins. So much humbug in my book. The rain does far more damage than the feet of a few tourists. Are Nicaraguan police guarding the walls? More security than a nuclear bomb factory. Security cameras, guard dogs, and a 10-foot fence around the fort, with barbed wire running along the top. One resident of El Castillo, a fellow by the name of Jesus Diego, became furious and tried to penetrate the security. Poor fellow was found hanging in a tree on the riverbank. Dead? Very dead. Rathbone quickly changed the subject. If I were you, I wouldn't go near the place. We shall take your advice, said Pitt. Well, gentlemen, it was a pleasure. Good evening. As they watched the old man shuffle away, Giordino said to Pitt, What do you think? Not what he appeared, Pitt said briefly. He made no mention of the container port. You caught the dainty hands, too? The skin was too smooth and free of blemishes for a man over 70. Giordino motioned to a waiter. Did you pick up on the voice? It sounded unnatural, as if it was a recording. Apparently Mr. Rathbone was handing us a bill of goods. It would be nice to know what game he's playing. When the waiter brought over another round of drinks and asked them if they were ready to be seated for dinner, they both nodded and followed him into the dining room. As they were seated, Pitt asked the waiter, What is your name?
Marcus.
Marcus, do you often experience earth tremors here in the jungle?
Oh, sí, señor. But not until 3, maybe 4 years ago when they began moving up the river.
The tremors move? Asked Giordino, puzzled.
Sí, very slowly.
In what direction? They started at the mouth of the river at San Juan del Norte. Now they shake the earth in the jungle above El Castillo. Definitely not an eerie phenomenon caused by Mother Nature. Giordino sighed. Where is Sheena, the jungle queen, when you need her? The gods will never let man find their secret. Not in the jungle, said Marcus, looking around him as if expecting an assassin to creep up on him. No man who goes in comes out alive. When did men start disappearing in the jungle? Asked Pitt.
About a year ago, a university expedition went in to study the wildlife and vanished. No trace of them was ever found.
The jungle guards its secrets well. For the second time that evening, Pitt looked at Giordino and they both cracked tight smiles. Oh, I don't know, Pitt said slowly. Secrets have an intriguing habit of becoming revealed.